Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris. Michael, in our pre-show discussion, you were fanning yourself quite a lot, so I assume that it is rather unpleasant and hot down there in Cape Town. How are you doing?
It is. It's funny. Every single year in Cape Town, especially, I'm sure it's the same for other cities. We can't wait for the start of summer because winter is always wet and miserable. But the minute we get some warm weather, it becomes becomes disagreeable. But no, I do actually enjoy the warm weather. But I tend to respond quite uncomfortably to it. So I just have to live with that. But yeah, a nice sunny day in Cape Town, and glad to be joining you both on the show.
Very good to have you with us. We're also joined today by Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Afternoon, doing well, thank you. Always good to be on the show with both of you. For the time being, the part Johannesburg in which I live still has water supply. So we're
Well,
waiting for the 10th of October-ish to see if the rainy season does sort of reward us this year. But for the time being, things are okay. So I guess that's what we should be grateful for.
indeed. Just one housekeeping note before we get stuck in. I just want to say that I'm sure some of our more avid and keen listeners have noticed that the show's sort of been appearing at slightly odd times or having weird issues over the past week. We had been trying some different software to see if that would assist with some parts of the quality of our video. Unfortunately, it was causing a lot of problems for us, and so we are back to the old way of doing things. Anyway, let's get into the news of today. And the first one is what I think is a very positive policy development from the Government of National Unity. This comes out of the Communications and Digital Technology Minister, Solly Malatsi, who is a DA minister. And he says that his goal right now is to facilitate foreign investment in the ICT sector. So that is basically communications technology stuff, internet, all that kind of thing. A lot of the focus in this discussion has been on Elon Musk's satellite internet company Starlink, but there are a lot of other companies as well who are interested, perhaps, in providing new communications investments in South Africa. However, one of the big things holding many companies back, including I think Musk's Starlink, has been the requirement that in order to be licensed, you need to get a, I think it's a 30% ownership by a BEE partner, and for many big companies, particularly foreign ones, this is really not something that they're keen to do, particularly because so often requirements like these are simply an excuse for someone politically connected to shuffle their way into getting a slice out of business without adding much to it. Well, Minister Malatsi says that he has a plan for how to maybe move around BEE in this particular sense. He's talking about creating empowerment and allowing people to qualify for the sort of BEE parts if they are engaged in what he calls equity equivalence. This means that if the company invests in schools, hospitals, or community centers, that this would be a sufficient thing instead of needing to fulfill a BEE requirement. He said, quote, "Equity equivalence recognized in other sectors provide an avenue for factoring in alternative ways for companies to make an impact on South Africa's socioeconomic development. Policy clarity on the recognition of equity equivalence schemes has long been sought by players in the ICT industry. This will provide the certainty necessary to attract increased investment in ICT and accelerate universal internet access. After consultations with the ICASA, the proposed policy direction will be published for comment." World Bank research shows that on average, every 10% increase in broadband penetration results in a 1.21 GDP growth in middle-income countries such as SA. Broadband access makes it easier for people to start businesses, grow businesses, seek employment, work remotely, market goods and services. Giving millions of South Africans access to broadband would therefore constitute one of the biggest empowerment programs the SA government has ever undertaken, Malatsi said. And that is exactly right. What we're seeing here is the potential for what happens if we get rid of some of these BEE requirements. Essentially, right now, we have laws that say we want one or a small group of people to be very powerfully enriched, as a form of redress, and the majority of people come second. But what this will do is say we're going to provide the greatest benefit for the greatest number of people, and if that means that we have a company that's not black owned, it's fine so long as they're uplifting the people of this country. Michael, let me start with you. I think this is a very good move by the minister, and I applaud it very highly. What, do you agree? Do you agree with my assessment here?
Yes, I certainly do. And I think just two additional observations. First is, you know, some months ago, people might have said, well, you know, communications and technology, this is not a very significant portfolio. What on earth is the Democratic Alliance likely to achieve by having this post? Well, it just shows that, you know, every cabinet post, in fact, can be turned to very good effect. And perhaps strategically, it might be very clever to use a portfolio like this one to try out a new way of empowerment. Which brings me to the second point before I get into any of the detail here. The second point I just wanted to mention was just how important empowerment is. And we do tend to forget this a full 30 years after apartheid. And readers will almost certainly know that Chris Hutting, our fellow participant today, is the executive director of the CRA, the Center for Risk Analysis. And for years now, since I think about 2016, I've been keenly following the CRA's annual quality survey. It's a quality of life survey based on a basket of 10 items, 10 or 10 issues, 10, yeah, 10 items, but ranging from whether you have a bonded house, to whether you have a job, to your income, to services that you receive, and so on. And every single year, this demonstrates very clearly what the spectrum of quality of life is across the country, province by province, but also socioeconomically and in terms of race. So what it brings out every year, and not surprisingly, is just how far we need to go still to overcome the very great impact of history. And this is not a question of morality. This is a question of practicality, of policy, of what we can actually do. And the point that the IRR has constantly made over the years, chiefly based on our senior colleague, Dr. Anthea Jeffries' work on economic empowerment for the disadvantaged, a completely non-racial empowerment model, is that like SASSA, like the SASSA grants, which are issued every month with great effect, very effectively, on a completely non-racial basis, Anthea Jeffries' model showed that in fact what you can do to really make a difference in the society to achieve real transformation is to take the racial element out of it and focus purely on the need. And here we have a minister who I hesitate to call him a junior minister in the government, but certainly a new one, and in a portfolio that would not necessarily strike most people as being hugely influential, doing something that is potentially hugely influential. And kudos to him. I think he appears to have gone about it exactly the right way. He's going to publish a proposal. It looks like it's a very practically oriented idea that he's come up with. I'm sure there are people around him helping him work on this. I think it's an excellent initiative. I agree with you there, Nicholas. And let's hope that it bears fruit and provides the example for other bigger ministries to adopt. So yeah, excellent all round.
So Chris, you know, we still haven't seen whether this is actually going to be fully implemented. He's putting it out for comment. I'm sure it will go forward, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether the ANC tries to push back against this in cabinet. So far, I haven't seen anything on that. Maybe there will be something down the line. I think it would be very good if they didn't, of course. But what do you make of this? I think this is an extremely intelligent move, and one that could perhaps pose an example for what can be accomplished if we start changing some of our race-based laws.
So number one, in and of itself, pushback might not necessarily be a bad thing if it came from the ANC or perhaps some of its partners, because that would show where they lie or where the red lines are for them. So if you're proposing something that at least in theory would generate more investment, more job creation, and dealing somewhat with South Africa's around 40% unemployment rate on the expanded definition. If you're pushing against that, what signal are you sending to your GNU partners, to South African citizens, South African businesses about how serious you are about actually changing, doing things differently in the post-2024 election South Africa, where you as the ANC have acknowledged the role that you've played in many iterations of various issues, but then when a minister from a different party brings forth a suggestion,
your gut feel is to kick against that. So it is useful maybe to help also drive certain wedges between those in the ANC, those who are more reform-minded and those who cling to very outdated, impractical and immoral ideas. Secondly, just it's not guaranteed that it will maybe devolve in this direction, but when you've still got the state dictating in a way the terms on which investment, business formation, etc. should take place, you run the risk of more bureaucracy, more trying to quote-unquote nitpick or turn this knob here, turn that dial there, because I, as a bureaucrat or a politician, I know that this particular region in the country or this metro, etc., needs this level of investment or needs to focus on tech or needs to focus on manufacturing. It becomes more of a planned economy versus a sort of organic, real growth economy, which you could get some way towards by removing those policy and legislative barriers to investment and to growth, but which are more difficult to remove because of vested interests, ideological concerns, etc. So this could be one way to get us there over a longer period of time. It, for many of us liberals, we get very frustrated that the GNU hasn't, you know, quote unquote, moved fast enough. But sometimes you just have to do what you can with what you have, and then shift the dial, that sort of Overton window over time of feasibility, of the possibility of policy, etc. So I think credit where it's due, just, you know, given our sort of line of work, we try and pick holes in proposals and arguments to make them stronger, as it were, even if we agree with them in principle.
Any final thoughts, Michael?
I mean, I think that dynamic is an important one to emphasize. Because you know, as an organization, a very old one, we have played that role, and for being perhaps unduly critical or unexpectedly controversial on certain things, but that is indeed part of our job, is to make the policy making environment, the argument itself, stronger and more robust. And yeah, just also to emphasize that point about the impact of private sector activity, and in this particular sphere, I think you mentioned this figure, Nicholas, that the World Bank research showing on average that every 10% increase in broadband penetration results in 1.2% GDP growth. I mean, that's quite something. And given that the GNU has publicly committed itself to priority number one being economic growth and jobs and so on, this is something that ought to be underlined. Yeah.
Okay, let us move on to our next story, and this is talking about COSATU. COSATU is, of course, still, I think, probably the biggest trade union federation in the country, and they are concerned about the economic conditions in South Africa. And they have some proposed solutions. Specifically, COSATU is demanding that there be a moratorium on retrenchments and an end to what it calls austerity measures in government, noting that, quote, budget cuts are threatening the quality of the education of our children. COSATU is planning to hand over a memorandum to representatives of Business Unity South Africa, Discovery, the National Department of Employment and Labour, National Treasury, the SA Reserve Bank at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and they also plan to have marches in Cape Town and Durban. What strikes me about this is how, you know, we were discussing COSATU's protest here in the pre-show discussion, and the thing that really strikes me here is how COSATU has identified that, yes, there is a problem. We have unemployment in this country. Many people are suffering economically. Many people are relying off of a 370 Rand grant to get them through the month, which is really, you know, not a lot of money. And yet their solution is to attack the private sector, say the government must spend us further into debt, presumably increasing the amount of interest that we pay on our currently already significant government debt. And we must just ban retrenchments. I mean, part of the reason we're in the mess that we're in currently is because government has been so sticky and so difficult about firing non-performing employees all over government, which has essentially meant that we are paying for services which are not being rendered. And this has hurt the middle class, but it's also especially hurt the poor, who get poor services and have less money to be spent on social programs and various kinds of development. And I think the point I'm trying to make here is just that Kasatu really does seem, I think, to be grasping for relevance in a country that is increasingly less interested in the things it has to say. Kasatu has suffered quite a lot internally. It's had some divisions, I know, over the government of national unity and whether it supports it or not. I think different unions have different views on that within Kasatu. Kasatu's had a number of breakaways, NUMSA and AMCU being the sort of major ones who have left the federation and gone on to start their own competing ones. And of course, the number of workers in South Africa who are unionized is kind of either flat or declining, which is a trend that's actually evident over most of the world, because trade unions are very much a kind of a model for you know, mass factories of the 19th century, I think, rather than the 21st century. But anyway, Chris, let me start with you. What do you make of Kasatu's protest here? I mean, obviously, they're raising some important issues, but you know, there just seems to be no real plan here of any realistic proportion of how to actually deal with South Africa's issues.
No, indeed. Kasatu calling for this action against what they call the crippling economic crisis in South Africa. But then the method by which you do that disrupts economic activity. The amount of economic activity that does take place makes it more difficult for people to get to work, to earn an income, to put food on the table for their family. So are you taking into consideration the short-term effects, but also then long-term? Let's assume, you know, that you get mass participation in this march, et cetera, et cetera. Where are your proposals around policy and legislation that have precipitated an almost 40% unemployment crisis, that have precipitated a 74% youth unemployment crisis, that has kept GDP growth at an average of 0.8% since 2012. These things don't happen in a vacuum. They happen because of policy and legislative choices over the years from chiefly Kasatu and its partners, not least of which, of course, the African National Congress, that had the majority in government, had the run of cabinet, could make all these decisions in parliament for many, many years. That's one, I guess, consideration. And secondly, research and work done by Gabriel Krauser from the Institute of Race Relations around this narrative that South Africa has imposed austerity for the last couple of years, and that's why it's in the situation in which it is. We can spend our way out. The work that Gabriel did looked at the increase in the amount of government, so government spending, especially as a share of GDP, versus government effectiveness. And that effectiveness is measured by a series of World Bank indicators. And over time, as South Africa, the size of the South African state grew, state spending, state services, the public sector wage bill, state-owned entities, all of that increased. The quality of service and impact activity by the government, by the state, decreased. So even along its proposed solutions, that is Kasatu's proposed solutions that are on a bigger state, more active state, more spending, all of those things, given the current constraints, the current, again, ideological predilections of the government, or at least of many government departments, that's not going to guarantee in any sense anything positive in terms of a change in policy, change in legislation, change in how the government conducts itself, unfortunately.
Yeah, one gets the feeling that Kasatu is running around going, we need to solve this unemployment crisis, but the cause of unemployment is coming from inside the house, which is, I think, Kasatu probably more than any other organization, except maybe some parts of the ANC, the one sitting labor policy, have more to do with our unemployment rate than anyone else. And to just say, no, you can't fire anyone ever, it's not a very realistic solution to any of these problems. Michael, what do you make of this?
One of the things I was thinking about towards the end of Chris's very good analysis of this was, in fact, the case of one Solly Molatsi. I remember Solly, I think probably in the late 90s, as a media spokesman for the city of Cape Town. And his trajectory, there are lots of reasons, I'm sure, for it. I don't know him very well. I knew him, you know, as a media person then. I was covering the city and other things. But clearly, it's a great, wonderful illustration of providing opportunities that people can use and build on and exercise their own agency within and on the back of. But without that opportunity, there's no chance of there being a real significant change in the lives of people. And I think, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of examples of people just like him who would have come from a background that might have had enormous impediments to any kind of success or successful career. And all he needed was an opportunity to show what he was worth and to really work at it. And you know, to demonstrate his capabilities. And without that, none of the things that Cassata says it wants is going to happen. There's this rather plaintive note in Boos's reaction to Cassata's plan. I could just find it here in the Daily Maverick story. That Boos released a statement expressing concern over the planned nationwide protest, saying it did not believe the strike would address any of the challenges Cassata was raising. And that's really the problem. It's not an issue of protest. It's not. We all know what the problem is. We all know that people are battling. And as you say, Chris, it's a question of whether they bring any real ideas to the table as to what we can actually do about this. So I think that really is the key point.
Yeah, I remember back when I was a DA member in the early 2010s, the government, as part of the National Development Plan, had actually budgeted for what it called what the DA called the youth wage subsidy, which was this idea that companies would be given an extra subsidy in order to hire young workers who had not been employed before, and this would hopefully get them a foot in the marketplace and therefore be able to get other jobs more easily. And this was very strongly opposed by Cassata, so much so that when I was part of a DA march to Cassata House to hand over memorandum asking them to stop blocking this youth wage subsidy, people dressed in Cassata colors came out of Cassata House bearing tasers, bricks, and sticks, and threw bricks at us, which was very exciting, but rather unpleasant, particularly when people were getting smacked in the head around me. So, yes, now let's just say there's no love lost between me and Cassata. And they simply saying people are unemployed, that's terrible. Yes, that's true. And everyone knows that. Even the very inert, sclerotic ANC who takes forever to come to the right conclusion has come to the conclusion that unemployment, poverty, and lack of economic growth is really the key problem facing South Africa. But what you're proposing is just either nonsensical or more of the same. We actually need to change track if we're going to lift people out of poverty and end unemployment in this country, which is ruining so many millions of lives. Any final thoughts, Chris?
Just to add the element of vested interests. These marches can serve a performative effect, and it makes you as a member or in the leadership of an entity like Cassata feel like you're quote unquote doing something, you're being active, you're trying to solve the problem. But really, once you're in that level of relationship with the biggest party in the government, once you've had your track record that you've had as Cassata, once you get into those rooms where these decisions around policy and legislation are made, you then raise the barriers to those behind you. You raise the barriers to competition because it protects your vested interests. So, again, wanting to assume the best of intentions, the real concerns here on the part of Cassata, also just being in that position, you're going to kick very hard against any potential reforms that undermine your security of influence, of some sort of income, of patronage, all of those things. It's not to say you can't change and break those habits and behaviors over time, but I think maybe we sometimes underestimate just how important that vested self-interest has become.
So let's move on to our last topic. Go ahead, Michael.
I'm just going to chip in there very briefly. I like your sharing Cities for the Future 2030's comment, because I in fact happen to agree that unions are critical for democracy, to protect workers' rights and so on, and to be part of that tension, the very thing that we were speaking about earlier, introducing a counter-narrative or some kind of oppositional thing to make sure the argument is solid and robust, that is very important. And he makes a key point there, being not being politically aligned. That might be a bit of a pipe dream in a way, that that unions aren't politically aligned, but we certainly see the perils in this society of that very particular alliance, a very clearly drawn alliance with the ruling party and Kossathi. And additionally, I think Chrissy mentioned also the fact that most of Kossathi's members are in the state. It's not in the private sector. And this is clearly part of the weakness of this organization. But yeah, I just thought a good thing to make.
As our colleague Sarah Gone has written before, if unions were thinking about their long-term health, they would be doing everything they could to get unemployment down and to get more people into jobs, because otherwise they're going to become increasingly irrelevant in a society that is just desperate for jobs at all costs. Okay, let's move on to our last story for today. And this is something that's going to be going on, I think, the whole week, not just on this show, but on, sort of the media and political commentary generally in the country. And that is a discussion of the first 100 days of the Government of National Unity. We were talking about this in our internal meeting this morning and how everyone thought the government was doing after 100 days in office. My view is that it's still too early to tell whether we're going in a good way or bad way. I think the GNU has been quite slow to get started, and I think that's it's sort of we were trying to come up with ways to describe it before the show. I suggest that it's like two people on a tandem bicycle who don't like each other very much going down the hill, trying to avoid swerving off the road or change the tire or something. It's difficult to get the whole thing going in the same direction just because of its constituent parts. But Michael, you had some thoughts on this. Before I get to that, we put out a press statement written by our colleague Herman Pretorius today saying, rhetoric and sentiment will not be enough to stimulate the sustainable economic growth on which South Africa's hopes of creating jobs and rolling back years of socioeconomic stagnation and decline depend. Michael, you had some thoughts on how the GNU is doing after 100 days in office.
One of the things that we were chatting about before, which we thought would be kind of worth exploring, is it arises from a story today in the news today about some dispute, evidently, between the ANC and the DA over the appointment of parliamentary chairpersons. And the intro of the story reads, more cracks are starting to show in the GNU's pact in Parliament. So that might well be true, but we've seen this phrasing before, the cracks appearing. And it's quite interesting how the vocabulary of these kinds of political debates tend to shape perceptions of what is actually happening. One of the points your image of the tandem bicycle, one of the points about the GNU was that when it began, it was filled with cracks. I mean, that's the nature of the thing. Two oppositional forces coming together to form one thing, there are going to be lots of cracks. And I suppose the risk is, as I made a note for myself here, that if the only available vocabulary is a vocabulary of failure, then we're actually going to fail to see what the real dynamics are, what is going to be achieved, what is achievable. I think the story about Solomon Lassie is a case in point. There are no cracks there, but it's obviously a difficult issue that he's raised. It's a crucial one for as far as the IRR is concerned and the people who think like us, that we've got to get away from all the kind of policy positions that have failed the society so far, and we've got to move on. And this is now that we're in a moment where this can be achieved. It couldn't have been done for 30 years prior to the 29th of May. Now we can do it. And the fact that there are difficulties doesn't necessarily mean that the cracks are appearing or that things are about to fail. But nevertheless, all that said, and optimism, I think, is a wonderful thing. I tend to be an optimist by nature. But one must also be a realist, and one must remember Chris's injunction that we've got to make sure that there are sufficient counter-arguments to keep whatever the good argument is strong. And this brings us to the statement today by Herman Pretorius, the head of strategic communications at the IRR, 100 days of GNU. And his intro is exactly right. The intro of his press statement, rhetoric and sentiment will not be enough to stimulate the sustainable growth on which South Africa's hopes of creating jobs and rolling back years of socioeconomic stagnation and decline depend. And I think that's really the key thing, isn't it? I mean, we there potentially lots of very positive potential in the GNU. Even if there are cracks appearing, it's not necessarily falling apart. The tandem is somehow making its way down the hill. But it can't just be all bonhomie and no no substance. There has to be some kind of substantial decision making, some kind of substantive direction being given by the cabinet as to how the society is actually going to change. And as Herrmann says, these things won't happen on their own. Jobs and growth are not going to happen on their own. They're not going to happen on the back of rhetoric and sentiment alone. And this is going to call for very decided and deliberate decision-making.
Yeah, and I always think that people often get way too wrapped up in, not just in South Africa, but in countries all over the world, but how the stock market is doing at any one time. The stock market is a very fickle thing that can turn like this from one thing to the other. What's more important is the underlying economic foundations of how healthy your economy is. And the sugar high that we're getting from the formation of the GNU will not last unless we do see those changes that allow us to have better economic growth. Chris, final thoughts from you.
So I'm very much in agreement with what both of you have stated. I want to not underestimate the importance of positive market sentiment and changing of narratives, but if you don't add substance in terms of nutritional structural reforms, then it really is just a sugar high that gives you a feeling of energy and something's happening and it's all frothy and exciting, but nothing of real substance. If you just look at how the Rand has performed, between January and September, the Rand has strengthened by 7%. That's second only behind the currency of Malaysia's 11.9%. And year on year, the Rand was up 8.5%. And partly also that helps in terms of the debt that government has to pay down, which has been mounting over time. So it gives government some more breathing room, maybe to reprioritize some spending. If you know government was to play a role in things like infrastructure, you wanted spent on things like that instead of just pure consumption in the form of the public sector wage bill. So I want to take the good with the bad, not to underestimate by any means the substantive risks that continue to exist, have been pointed out before the government was formed by many analysts and commentators, but also not to discount the potential that this does show for South Africa, that reflects in a way polling done by the Institute for many, many years, many decades, by the Social Research Foundation, by the Brentes Foundation, around what the average South African wants from their government in terms of more centrism, safety, security, stability for themselves, their families, economic growth and prosperity. The GNU, to some extent, reflects what we see in the polling year after year. It now just depends on where can the wins be made and where can one build in ways to deal with the risks that do exist, not least of which for some of the political parties within the GNU that lean more towards liberalism, individual freedom, and individual rights.
Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.